any activity I'm doing to understand my audience better, to reach my audience better, to generate the assets that persuade them more, to create plans and strategies that do that. And I sort of am doing all of that. I'm not trusting and relying on AI explicitly. You know, I'm thinking for myself and like I said, using it as kind of a thought companion.
Hello, and welcome to the Misadventures in Marketing podcast, presented by the American Marketing Association San Francisco chapter. I'm Steve Haney, a fractional CMO in Silicon Valley.
And I'm Peter Farrago, a marketing executive in the Bay Area. Each week, Steve and I come together to talk about all things in high-tech marketing.
We share our own experiences running marketing teams with a special focus on technology startups, our successes, our failures, what worked and what didn't. Also, periodically, we invite our CMO friends and other marketing colleagues onto the show and hopefully impart some wisdom along the way. Peter, what you doing?
Oh, I'm taking a break from work. Today's topic is appropriate because I was messing around with ChatGPT quite a bit earlier this morning, trying to create some content. We recorded a session of interviewing a thought leader this morning, and I was editing a blog post, and I was reworking some homepage copy. How about you?
Things are just moving along here. It looks like I'm going to be joining the advisory board of a young startup.
Nice.
Five very, very bright guys doing some cool things and something I can't discuss right yet. So yeah, I've been helping them hone their pitch and get their go-to-market story together because they're going to be going out for funding soon. And of course, we're in the throes of summer, so the kids are doing a million different things. And, you know, we're planning camping trips and performances and more college tours for my oldest. But I know it's the same for you. You're pretty busy on the family front.
It's true. My oldest, who lives in New York, is going to start at NYU. She's transferring in the fall. She's coming home for a month, like next week. My middle one just graduated high school. My youngest one got promoted from middle school and starting high school next year. And he was on the middle school trip to the East Coast in DC just last week. And one of my daughters is at a kind of a sports tournament thing this weekend. So like, if I think about it, it's true. I do have a lot going on. It's just my head is so focused in work and I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I am busy in this other way too.
Okay. So
maybe I'm missing out on life.
Well, you know, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans, right? As John Lennon would say. So the thing is, maybe you need to use AI more, Peter. So what we're going to focus on today is specifically you and me, how we're using AI in our day-to-day work. But we wanted to get on and talk about this because we're so just engaged with it and love it so much. We're having so much fun with these new tools. So, you know, Google I.O. happened a couple of weeks ago. A ton of interesting announcements there. The stuff that Google is rolling out is really just the speed. It is insane. You know, I encourage everybody to go look at their labs page. And actually, I encourage everybody to go get a Google One a subscription. You know, it's like $20 a month. You get exposure to all the new tools, all the lab stuff. And then, of course, Apple wrapping up WWDC. A lot of announcements around Apple Intelligence and what they're delivering. I know the big headline there was their new design language. But what I found most interesting, and Peter, this is something I want to get into because you touched on it, certainly in the context of, your current job, is Apple really understands that they're kind of a retailer or a distribution point. And it's not so much building the core technologies and LLMs, although they're doing a little bit of that. They really understand, how do I actually deliver up these technologies to end users on a broad general purpose computing platform in a way that's meaningful? Now, I think one super exciting, really interesting thing they announced was they're putting in iOS 26, actually all the 26 versions of their operating systems, local LLMs, which is pretty wild. More importantly, they're shipping a framework so that developers can write to the local device LLMs to do certain things and not have to incur the cost of going out to a ChatGPT or a Perplexity or a Claude or a Gemini and incur those costs. And then, you know, I guess the other big thing, there's been this whole story, at least within the geek community, getting a lot of attention. Anthropic's CEO, really concerned about the economic disruption that he feels is going to happen very, very soon. This is not a new theme, but, you know, and I don't want to say it's like a doomsday scenario, but it's basically saying everybody really, really needs to start getting prepared for the jobs that are going to be disrupted. And it's going to happen very soon, and it's going to be very dramatic. And then I think another very, very interesting recent development, kind of on the tectonic level, is OpenAI. Sam Altman announced in a video with Jony Ive, the famous industrial designer at Apple, who pretty much has defined, you know, any and every technology object we touch. They bought his company IO, and it's going to be some line of hardware products that allows people in a real way to, you know, interact with these new AI technologies. A lot of talk about making them more human. I mean, Ive has more than once said in a little bit of a, I don't want to say a press tour over the past month or two, about how a lot of concern about this monster he helped unleash in terms of these screens that we're all constantly looking at and doom scrolling through. And he feels that there's a better, more human way to deliver these next wave of very powerful AI technologies. You know, the cool thing about Sam Altman is I think he is very much in that school of humanity that Jobs and Apple very much approach. And I think Sam Altman really understands that he doesn't have distribution. I mean, I got to tell you, the main reason I use Gemini over ChatGPT is because it integrates with all my Google Workspace apps. It has all my search history. And I like the fact that it takes the legacy company's stuff I've been doing with them for decades now and gives it new context, new life, new abilities, new power. And with ChatGPT, you know, definitely a lot of functionality within the chat bot and the chat interface, but there are a million other ways to take advantage of that. And I think Sam Altman knows that I don't have distribution the way Google does. Sam Altman's thinking, okay, I got to think of a unique way to get my product out in the world that's beyond only a chat bot, which everybody now has anyhow. But then there's a whole other way to deliver the functionality, so that they're able to get, you know, their LLMs in front of customers, whether it be consumer or enterprise, in a way that's going to give them a defensible position.
Well, there's a couple main things. I mean, there's the fear of job displacement, you know, the Anthropic CEO. I think that's a story of skills adaptation. If you look at a lot of disruptive technologies over the last several hundred years, you know, they also create other jobs, or they remove some drudgery or repetition. It's going to be a question of what people are better at than, say, a machine, to just give it a clean label, people versus machines. I think generally, like, strategy, creativity, nuance, human relationships, psychology, these are things that are harder to replicate by machines. You know, that's what I would say around kind of skills adaptation and like what to lean into. It's like anything, you know, when the computer came out, you had to be good at computers, whatever that meant.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like people got good at spreadsheets. Spreadsheets didn't remove people's jobs. You know, it gave you a tool. So, you know, is it a tool or is it like something more than a tool, I guess, is the question. About OpenAI, they're really kind of a lab, not necessarily a product company. You know, they build a foundational model, and they hadn't really been kind of a product company. So, you know, to get someone like Johnny Ives to go in is probably a nod to this idea that they need to be more user-centric and design-oriented and create a unique experience because, you know, that's going to be the next frontier or the next, you know, kind of battleground is what I think of as applications. It's not just the engine. It's like the application of the engine and how that's delivered, right? Yeah. And did he buy Johnny Ive's company for what they do, or did he really just need that designer and the publicity and the idea that they're going to have a better UX and UI over time, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know, because I think they're lacking that. I've always wondered why Google isn't dominating more in AI. You know, they invented the adapter, Transformer. They hired every notable academic on the planet to go work for them. They have been organizing the world's information for two decades. They have the best indexed, you know, map of human knowledge compared to almost any entity on the planet. So, like, they have the best data source that's already organized to an extent. And they have the real research science capacity paired with, you know, good product building and go to market. So I wouldn't say they're perfect and they blow things away, but they get things to work efficiently. I think that the game for them is a little bit different, right? They're not trying to make models for the sake of that. They are a company that has a lot of existing products, and they have to think about how to add features into those products. There's a lot of surface area. For example, search, their core business is really under siege. And so they have to react faster, right? Like, people are going to ChatGPT or Claude on Anthropic to just ask questions and get full answers instead of like a list of links and you click on the link and next to that link is an ad. You know, that search dominance is getting challenged pretty significantly through a big shift in user behavior. Apple, on the other hand, is interesting because they have a very slow approach to thinking about AI generally and how they're going to include it in their products. You know, what they announced at WWDC recently isn't really much groundbreaking stuff. It's sort of like, yeah, we'll kind of like add it a little bit here and maybe a little bit there. But they also are a hardware company who has a much different moat. They're vertically integrated. They're deep into making or influencing their own chip manufacturing all the way through the glass and the phone and the design of that hardware and the operating system and the applications that run on it and so on. Like, they have to think they're in a win state with the iPhone, though it's, you know, slowing down in terms of sales. It's like the thing that's in most people's hands that people are interacting with. So they have to, again, think of AI as something that might enhance or improve an experience, and they don't have the same urgency as, say, a Google to take more risks or innovate more rapidly because, you know, the truth is they have time. And, you know, their bigger problem is the phones are getting so big that we're not replacing it every year, year and a half. We're waiting 2-3 years to do it, right? So that's slowing down their sales. And most everybody has a smartphone now, so it's not like you're still getting new users to come on board. It's sort of like, okay, I have an existing population that, like, whose replacement cycle is slowing. Now what do I do?
Right. Yeah. Well, and they're, you know, what Apple gets is that 95% of their users get off on Genmoji, not chatbot. Never going to know, but they talked about the next Genmoji engine so much and how, you know, it's going to be even bigger and better in iOS 26. And it's like, okay, they get their customer. That's the inane shit that the real humans love. You and I, we're going in to, you know, ChatGPT and creating agents. which is just a completely different conception of how to use the technology. And what I wanted to dive into for the meat of this is how we, and specifically you, Peter, but how we are using this for our marketing efforts. Tell us how in your day-to-day work you're using AI.
I think of it as kind of a thought partner or a sounding board. And I do want to correct you on one thing. When we use ChatGPT, we're not making an agent. We're interacting with an LLM. Mm. What I've done is kind of tailor it to work better for me. And in ChatGPT, there is a, I think at least with the paid services, you then unlock a feature that's called folders for them. And what that allows you to do is put together kind of a knowledge base, a set, create some persistent context. And what I mean is, like, let's say you're at a company and you want to update your marketing plan, or upload your marketing plan, or you want to upload your messaging document, or just product and feature descriptions. You know, maybe you have a nice, you know, we have some really nice explainer videos. Our CEO does. I turn them into transcripts and I add it there because the way he describes it works. I also take all of our sales transcripts, because, you know, we're constantly having conversations with customers, and
that's awesome. You know, cool.
Yeah. What you want to do, of course, is use the language your customer uses. You want to understand their world, their pain points.
I could just use a messaging exercise to say, ask the AI, what themes are going through these customer discussions? The broad,
correct. Real, and so,
like, what am I missing? Yeah. Right.
Totally. Well, so then I formed this foundation, and maybe that's like something I started realizing and doing over time, but it becomes a thought partner and it becomes a sounding board. I asked it, like, hey, as a forensic scientist, kind of break down the usage of this guy, me, using it professionally in a marketing capacity. And I have a folder for my company, Run LLM, where I have all these documents I was describing uploaded. And so then I might say, like, hey, you know, based on the top pain points my customers seem to be having, what's a series of blog topics I should write, you know, or what objections, you know, are we getting and what assets might we need for that or whatever. So once I have a foundation, I can ask it relevant questions to help me achieve certain things or give me guidance on what to achieve. So it's like not always perfect, but it gives me an ability to generate first drafts, to test existing drafts, to give me guidance. I did some ICP and persona development just to kind of see how well it would do. And I had all these sales transcripts. It was so interdependent on building all these things at the same time. So there is a prompt structure that one should follow. What normally I think would take a lot of interviewing and maybe hiring an agency and all that stuff, I just took sales transcripts and asked myself, can I get a good feeling for my audience based on, you know, a series of live conversations we documented? And so these are the ways I'm kind of using it. I have many other examples, and I have ways of making it, I think, more useful, the output more useful for me. Like, I was editing a blog post this morning, and I generated the blog post based on some interviews of some other folks and some research I did. And I asked it, can you generate, I had the angle, I had the hook, but I could say, you know, give me a draft. And then I took that draft and edit it. And then I pass it over to our CEO who looks at my stuff. And so I'm still doing a lot of the things I used to do as a human, meaning, like, I generate an idea for a blog post. The draft is, you know, is it compelling? I don't know. Let me have a second pair of eyes on it, so like a trustworthy editor. That comes back. And then I take that feedback and then I think about it and I frankly cycle that through ChatGPT again. And I wanted to see how well, like, Gemini might do, because Gemini is so grounded, meaning it's looking at so many articles all the time because of its internet strength. And so it took me a while, but I basically was grinding the heck out of it and I was looping it through real people as editors and getting analysis and evaluation from other LLMs and then, you know, trying to get a more written, stronger piece.
I would say 70% of my usage is just search. Because I never do web search, I ask questions. That's always how I've used Google. And I hate doing search because I don't want to click through even 10 links. I just want the answer, right? And what I love about, you know, Google is branding this as AI mode, is that I just now go on and ask the question that I want an answer to. And sometimes I get a good answer, sometimes I don't. But it's pretty much just a new UI on top of web search. Like XYZ bush in my front yard has died. What do you recommend I do? You turn on the camera, you turn the camera around to face whatever, and then you just have a discussion. Here's the bush. You know, it's here in my front yard. What should I do about this? And it's kind of like what you're saying about engaging in a discussion. It helps people understand exactly how these things can fit into your life and help you out. That's kind of the level of engagement where it's basically just search.
But when I'm using it more day to day, like you, I'll say I use it that way too. Like I had to buy a car. My car had like 150,000 miles on it. Nice car, but end of lifing. And I was kind of like asking it to compare these different models of cars I was looking at, trying to get the right blue book value. And then I even asked it, you know, I was going to a dealership as a used car, but at a dealership. And I was kind of like asking it for tips on how to negotiate. Like, I went to a great MBA program and I had one of the best negotiation classes in the world. Apparently this professor is somewhat famous, but it's like, I don't know, like I negotiate for a car once every 3 years. And so, you know, one of the things you hit on was multimodal, the good LLMs, you know, are multimodal, meaning you can take a picture or a video and feed that in and it can like recognize
it. It would be like you were a plant expert and I had you on a FaceTime call and I'm just talking with you about what do I do here. I also use it with my proposals. You know, just the other day, I put together a 30, 60, 90 day plan for responding to an RFP for a potential client. Now, you know, I had to go in and edit and add, but it gave me a framework. It gave me something to start with, and it did the job really, really well. Because I'm in Google Workspace doing a lot of work, Gemini is riddled, again, it's kind of the Apple approach. The Gemini stuff is riddled throughout all the Google Workspace apps. And so it's nice to be able to do a presentation and ask it to create, like within the slide while you're working, go create this kind of graphic for me or go create this video for me. I mean, it's just incredibly powerful to add punch and impact. And so I was thinking maybe we could wrap this discussion up by talking about how we hope to use this going forward, like things we haven't done yet. Like, what do you want this tech to do for you?
I guess if I boil it down, the bottom line is to help drive momentum and revenue for a company. And the momentum is around like the brand credibility and authority. But that's because I want us to be hopefully known and trusted so that the decision to use us or learn from us and possibly buy our products is greater. So it's pretty simple. Like, so it's anything in service of, from a marketing standpoint, it's anything in service of that, any activity I'm doing to understand my audience better, to reach my audience better, to generate the assets that persuade them more, to create plans and strategies that do that. And I sort of am doing all of that. I'm not trusting and relying on AI explicitly. You know, I'm thinking for myself and like I said, using it as kind of a thought companion. ChatGPT is a little bit verbose. And there's actually some, the reality is that a verbose LLM learns faster. So by giving longer answers, they're actually, the training is faster. So that there's a reason they're doing that. So it's not really an answer per se about what I want it to do. I want it to help me make more impact. And I'm still trying to figure that out. I think for marketing in general, that's always a moving target. So I don't know. I definitely want it to be a knowledge base for me that deeply understands my audience so that if nothing else, I can, you know, I can go to it as an easy resource to help me then, you know, react to something I need
to. And I think that's the thing, right? Because right now everybody's like, oh, this is a great automation technology and I can get more done. But I think what you're hinting at, correct me if I'm wrong here, is that you want it to help you be more effective and produce higher quality output, not just get more stuff done.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely have a quality over quantity and impact and results orientation.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want it to automate away a bunch of boring stuff, but I still don't want it to be too good at some of this creative stuff, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this, you know, I always say if you cut an AI, does it bleed? Right. That's my tagline. And
well, what do you hope it does? I mean, you might have been looking at this a little more objectively. I'm in the throes of just doing a ton of work and trying to grind day to day. You've probably been thinking more strategically, honestly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I just want better automation. You know, I have a client I'm doing some work for, and they're holding an event, and there's just a ton of signage. And what I'm doing is I'm having all the various parties in Canva. Canva's got spreadsheets now, and shared out the spreadsheet in Canva. And I said, input all these fields for all the signage you need. You know, in this column, put the copy that you want on the sign. You know, and this length width, you know, put in the length and, you know, just the size of your sign. You know, there's, even though it's not relevant to the AI, put in your, you know, what material, you know, plain paper, foam board, whatever. And then desired graphics. I put for the client in Canva there, I built their brand kit out. It's got the logo in it. It's got their Pantone colors and the whole thing. And I haven't been quite able to get it to work, but I just want to tell the AI, here are all the signs we need. Here's the copy that goes on them in this column. Here are the graphical elements. You know, we need this at this. We want their logo on all of them. Obviously stick to the brand guidelines and the brand kit and pump out the artwork. And the Canva AI is okay. It's still a work in progress. I think I'm going to be able to get it what I want to do. But, you know, for the kind of project we're working on, that's kind of mind-boggling, right? That all the signage artwork, which is like dozens of signs.
But image generation is a completely different process. I mean, I have a subscription to Midjourney, and I've been playing with image generation and Canva. And I don't use Canva to generate images. Sometimes I've tried, I play with it. But I actually weirdly find DALL-E, which is part of ChatGPT, compared to the others, to give me usually the best output. And then what Canva's great at, though, is they have a bunch of editing tools. Some of them are sort of magic tools as part of their AI toolkit. But like you can grab an image, or you can grab text, you can separate a layer or erase a part of an image, a flat image. And so what I do is I kind of do it in whatever image engine, let's call it, gives me the best whatever I'm trying to generate. And then I finish it in Canva, usually with the editing tools. I tune it up. That's kind of the workflow I've found. I find that the bottom line with your project, sorry, if I may,
yeah.
I'm helping get out of your way, I hope.
Yeah.
But the you have like a dozen or so assets to create all this signage. And are you finding, though, and this is the litmus test, are you finding that it is effectively saving you time and or improving the quality of that output that you need? Are you creating the signs that you care about faster and better?
Well, that's the hope. This is why I said this is the part about what I wanted to do for me in the future, because, you know, to me, that's the hint. I mean, it's just automation. I just want to say, here's a spreadsheet with all my signs. You know, everybody from the team has put in their signage requests in the spreadsheet. Just go do a first draft of all the artwork. And, you know, it outputs them in whatever, you know, .ai files or .png, you know, whatever the appropriate thing is. So I can then just upload all those files, share them with the printer, and they go to town and do their thing. I just want better automation where I can interact with the AI for a marketing task in a very natural, fluid way, because that's what I would do with a creative director. I mean, with this client, I don't have a creative director. And I would go to the creative and like say, have everybody put their signage requests in this spreadsheet. Yeah, And then go make all the signs. And then they would deal with the printer and everything else for the event. I just want to talk to the Canva AI and have it do that for me, at least in terms of producing the art. And then obviously I'm going to have to go to the printer. So that's one thing, just better automation. And then the other thing is the agents or agentic AI, but you basically are creating, I call it a bot or a person. And I started to build these out for my practice. So the whole idea is that Steve Haney Consultancy, you know, right now I'm pretty much just a fractional CMO, and I go in and on a part-time basis for a company, I manage the team, handle all the marketing functions on an executive level. But it's nice to be able to have my own team in-house, and, you know, they're all agentic AIs. They're all bots. So I give them names. I've got one for demand gen. I've got one content marketer. And my content marketer, her name is Connie Marquez, right? Content marketer, Connie Marquez. And for me, that just helps humanizing them. I know a lot of people have issues with anthropomorphizing these things, but from a UI perspective, it helps me make them useful to me.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I feel like I have a relationship with the LLM I use. But I haven't gone through naming it like people, which is fine. It, whatever works for anybody, that doesn't bother me. But what I'm thinking, though, is like the comparison I'm thinking of is I will have a folder that has all the knowledge related to a company. So if I'm thinking, let's say you have a client, you're going to have some core documents up there that describe their product and basically, you want a repository of information so that when you want to like position a product or write a campaign or this and that, you're using things accurately and in their terminology and so on. And you understand the audience and whatever, whatever. Then I have like the way I'm using it as kind of a virtual team, if you will, is I will have a chat that's running for, say, like blog posts I'm writing, content. And I have another one for like LinkedIn marketing, like because I'm constantly having to help me generate like the posts that I put up, and I kind of play around with that a little bit. I can even ask it to, you know, write me the meta description, 160 characters or fewer. But I have it kind of by work stream. So it can help me do all that stuff. But I basically am just kind of saying, hey, I have a chat that's running, and I might name it blog, or I might name it LinkedIn marketing, or I might name it ICP, or I might name it social or LinkedIn marketing dash whatever. And so I have it that way, but I don't know how that ongoing chat is more uniquely qualified to do, say, demand generation versus like campaign creation versus like a webinar topic or whatever you're doing.
How you train it on a specific discipline.
But I don't know how I'm training it, right? Well, the way I'm quote-unquote training is that I'm giving it context. I might upload a document and I'm asking it. I'm giving it context on the task I'm trying to achieve. I'm thinking about context of the conversations I've had and narrowing the tasks that I always do, like writing a blog or working on website copy or working on LinkedIn copy promo post stuff. Like, or there's one I have a series of videos and I always work in the same one for like the transcripts and turning them into whatever. And so that's how I use it. It's a little bit of a division of labor. I don't know that it would quite be like a specific employee's role, but it's more about like turning this very all-purpose Swiss Army knife thing into something that can give me a more structured, useful piece of output, if that makes sense. So I don't think of that as an agent, and I don't think of that conversation I'm having as a person on a team.
Yeah. Peter, lots of learning for both of us still.
Yeah.
With this exciting new stuff. It's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. We could go on forever. I think, you know, if I had to summarize it, it's, you know, it's a lot about giving it the right context to give me useful answers that matter. And I am always thinking of the bar is that ultimately a human being on the other end has to find that this makes sense, is credible, is compelling, is sensible. And it helps accelerate me getting maybe that content made a good first draft, the editing, the thinking it through, you know, coming up with something that's nicely formatted and pretty robust and full looking. But I still have to like be the one who decides yes or no, it's good enough. Yes or no, it fits, and so on.
All right. Thanks to our audience for listening. Our editor, Lorenzo Fernandez-Kopek at Peakbound Studio, for making us look and sound fantastic. Our marketing maven, Ian Robinson Lambert, for getting the word out. Julianne Bernalis for being our consulting producer. Ariana Acevedo for our brand and graphics work. And as always, Eric Widener, president of AMA San Francisco chapter, for presenting this podcast. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Workbox, for their support of Misadventures in Marketing.